The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Ken Show.
Hello, Bob here with this week's Bubble Genius Showcase item of the week. Halloween is just around the corner, so visit BubbleGenius.com and pick up their Bath-O-Lantern Pumpkin Shea Butter Soap. So good, you'll want to eat it. Their Jack-O-Lantern soap is colored and scented with real pumpkin, with the added punch of clove essential oil to make it pumpkin pie-y. Shea butter makes it extra luxurious. Only $6 at BubbleGenius.com. But if you use our promo code BobAndChez, that's B-O-B-A-N-D-C-H-E-Z, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now let the cartoons begin.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
What the hell was that?
Taxi cab.
What do you mean a taxi cab? I thought we were flying.
Precisely.
All right, Doc, what's going on, huh? Where are we? When are we?
We're descending toward Hill Valley, California at 4:29 p.m. on Wednesday, October 21st, 2015.
2015? You mean we're in the future?
On the internet, we're the tops. Wonderful, here's the hot one.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
You people are sick.
It is Tuesday, October 20, 2015. God damn, where does the year go?
Right.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob Seska. That's Chez Pazienza right there.
Yo.
We're brought to you every week by BubbleGenius.com. Every single damn show. It's the best damn soap in the world. Also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. If you need a lawyer, better call Bo. Or you can go to thebowenlawgroup.com/Bob and Chez. Get free legal advice from Charles Bowen. Just click the link on the podcast page. That takes you right there. Okay, because we had so much show, lined up today that we had to bump Charles Johnson again.
Really?
We're like the second time. Charles Johnson's going to be on the show on Thursday. Okay. I promise. Charles Johnson from Little Green Football is going to be on the show on Thursday.
Cool.
He's also an affiliate of the show, and we thank him for that. You can listen to our show or read lots of good stuff at littlegreenfootballs.com. Speaking of Charles Johnson, we have some Chuck C. Johnson news coming up here in a little bit. But as you can probably tell by the open of show today, it's actually Back to the Future Day, or it's the day before. It's like Back to the Future Day Eve. So tomorrow, October 21st, 2015, will be the day in which Marty McFly went to the future and met his future self and his kids and had that that hoverboard chase with Biff. Or Griff. I should say it was Griff. Biff's son. Or grandson. Is it his grandson? Yeah, I guess it's his grandson.
I never saw Back to the Future 2.
You never saw Back to the Future? You've never seen it?
I saw the original and I love it. I never saw 2 or 3.
You should go watch number 2, as you can see.
You know why? Because I thought that the 3 looked unbelievably stupid. And I thought to myself, given that 2 and 3 are supposed to be taken as a whole, there's no reason to sit through 2.
The center part of 3 was terrible, but the first act and the third act were both good. But, I mean, as far as Back to the Future 2 goes, that is the... I mean, they basically project the Donald Trump future god-awful utopia.
How lovely.
Like when Biff...
Are you sure you want to use Donald Trump and utopia in the same sentence?
That's true. Well, as far as he's concerned, it would be the Donald Trump utopia. Hill Valley in 2015 is basically like the Donald Trump land. It's like...
No Mexicans?
No Mexicans.
A big wall keeping Mexicans out?
Right. The trophy wife with big fake honkers and, you know, whatever. So it's Back to the Future Day. As of the 22nd of October, we will be farther into the future than Back to the Future was.
And yet we still don't have, you know, hoverboards. Not real hoverboards.
Don't have hoverboards. Are the Cubs going to win? Are the Cubs going to go to the World Series?
I don't know.
You have any idea?
Not if they keep playing the way they did the other day, or actually if the Mets keep playing the way they did the other day.
I'm following the baseball at all, but do the Cubs have a chance?
It's the Mets against the Cubs.
It's the Mets against the Cubs right now. And yes. Is that the playoff series or is this the championship series?
That's the series. That's the series leading up to.
This is the National League Championship Series.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, all right. Who's leading the series? Is it the Cubs or the?
No, ultimately, it's the Mets.
It's the Mets. Okay.
You got to root for the Cubs. You got to. I mean, you have to because granted, the Mets for a long time have sucked as bad as the Cubs, but really. Nobody in baseball has sucked as bad as the Cubs.
I know. You know, I'm
100 years. Come on, dude.
All right, so let's just dive into the show. The big news of the day, actually, is Jim Webb is out of the race. I think it was
kind of a predictable thing. He left as angrily as he stormed into it.
That's right.
Jim Webb comes in like a lion and goes out like an angry lion.
That's right. So when he went up to announce, you know, whoever was introducing him, he went up to that guy, spun the guy's head around, snapped his neck, and then took the podium.
Yeah.
Said, F you! All right, I'm done. I'm out. I'm going to run as an independent, which is going to be a big waste of time. I mean, why would anyone do that? Yeah. I mean, why would anyone in 2015, 2016, run as an independent, especially someone as unlikable as Jim Webb? I mean, let's face it. Like, you know, it's been a while since 2006, so we can actually come clean on this. Jim Webb won in 2006 in Virginia. He beat George Allen, basically because George Allen used the word macaca.
Yeah, because George Allen's an asshole.
Exactly.
Yes. So he won because the other guy is a complete asshole.
What happened was that it was one of the most contested, hotly contested races, and it came down to recounts, and it was tight, and I think Jim Webb won by just a few votes, even though George Allen made a notoriously racist remark. Some guy he referred to as macaca. It was George Allen's macaca moment. I'm just going to work in the word macaca one more time.
Thanks.
But that's how Jim Webb got elected to the Senate, and then he was just a big nothing in the Senate, which I guess it was okay because he voted with the caucus most of the time.
Right.
But he's just a big nothing burger. I don't know what the hell he intends to prove by running as independent. But I'm glad he's out of the Democratic race. Just in time for, you know, Joe Biden to get in. Can we just do this now? No! I'm just waving him off. No, 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 no!
I'm really hoping that doesn't happen. I'm really hoping he doesn't drop a giant, you know, MIRV nuclear warhead, series of nuclear warheads into the middle of this campaign.
This is a big,
into the middle of the Democrats' plans.
Big old crazy bomb dropped into the middle of the Democratic race for president.
Yeah, you know, it's not even so much like a crazy bomb in the sense that I know you've written a lot about how he is kind of a wild card because he does silly things and he's like very gaffe prone.
Yeah.
I just think in general, the last thing you need is one more candidate, and especially a vice president, to go in there and to just turn it into a circus. It wouldn't matter if Joe Biden were serious as hell, serious as cancer. You know, him entering the race now is just a fucking disaster.
Yeah, I mean he's just a mess. He's a mess waiting to happen. He's always been a mess. He's just one of these guys that I can't embrace this guy. I can't support
this
guy.
And as much as I like him, and I do like him, it is moving the Democrats, number one step closer to being the Republicans, and number two, one step closer to a potential Republican victory. I'm sorry, but nothing should stand in the way of, you know what, you got Bernie, you got Clinton, let those two go at it, see who comes out on top, and that's how it works.
Yeah, I mean, for all this time, for most of the year, I've been like, you know what, I'm going to stay out of the Bernie-Hillary stuff. You know, I had a few things to say right at the beginning, right before Bernie was about to declare, but mostly I've steered clear of it, because I had my ass in it in 2008. I mean, I was ass deep in the whole Hillary Obama argle bargle that took place during the primaries. And I was really steeped in that. And I just said, you know what? I've done that. Obama was my guy. I don't really see myself like actively online campaigning for anybody like that again. It's just not gonna happen.
I like Hillary. I mean, you know, put it this way. I love Bernie. As a guy, as a legislator from Vermont, I love Bernie. I think he's fucking awesome.
And now that I've seen Larry David do the Bernie Sanders impression.
That is pretty great. He's fulfilling his televisual destiny. I sat next to Bernie on a flight out of Vermont into D.C.
Oh, wow, cool.
Out of Burlington. And we talked. And he's the greatest guy on earth. I love him. He's a blast, you know? But I'm not, you know, I've kind of put this out there. I think that Hillary Clinton will get more done. I think that she's more ready to go up against the absolute cavalcade of bullshit she's going to get.
That's true.
And I think that her goals are not as pie in the sky as Bernie's. And also, putting all of that aside, Hillary has a better chance of winning. That is the bottom fucking line.
Oh, yeah,
that
yeah.
Is the political reality.
Absolutely.
There is no way that somebody like Bernie Sanders, who looks like Bernie Sanders, talks like Bernie Sanders, and declares himself to be a democratic socialist, is going to win the presidency of the United States of America. It will not fucking happen.
And if it
you're
does.
A huge Bernieite, awesome for you. Get it through your head. You can support him all you want. He's a great guy, and I love him. But he can't win. He will not win.
And if he does, it's going to be nail-bitingly close and with very little by way of coattails.
So,
this is how I'm looking at it now. But the fact is that, you know, because I went through what I went through in 2008, defending Obama and attacking Hillary just relentlessly, wasn't prepared to do that again. And I'm just seriously not. I just don't want to get into it. The fact is, though, Joe Biden gets in, it's going to be all bets are off.
Yeah.
This guy would be, I mean, in fact, I would actually go so far as to graduate this music to being the Joe Biden music.
Because Biden would be getting in it strictly for his own ego.
Yeah. I mean,
And again, I like Biden. I do. You know, I think he's been a you know, gaffe prone or not, I think he's been a pretty cool vice president. You know, he's straight talking, even though that is really his undoing sometimes. But yes, he is an issue, a giant issue waiting to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And just his mere presence in this race would be terrible. It would be terrible. It would be he needs to understand going into this that, you know what, if I enter this race right now, Reince Priebus will do somersaults, will do cartwheels. He will be light. There will be fireworks, bottle rockets being shot out of his chimney.
I mean, and I don't care. You know, if you're a good – oh, by the way, I've got this.
Even call centers. Even call centers was rushed overseas in the hundreds of thousands. How many times you get the call? I'd like to talk to you about your credit card.
God, that never gets old. That pause right there where the little Homer Simpson in his head said, stop doing this.
don't say it.
Yep, don't say exactly.
Oh,
that's exactly
my God.
Right.
But the fact is that, I mean, you set all of that aside, and this guy, with his bankruptcy bill in 2005, effed the middle class a million different ways. Just 4 years ahead of the Great Recession,
right.
Lobbied for this bill, got it passed, George W. Bush signed it right away, and then everyone's screwed. Everyone with every middle-class family with unsecured debt out the a-hole is then screwed by Joe Biden, because Joe Biden's loyalty is to Wilmington, where all the credit card companies are. MBNA, Bank of America, which now owns MBNA, Chase, all the others. And he signed this bill, making it impossible for middle-class families to file a clean slate bankruptcy with Chapter 7, forcing them into a Chapter 13, which basically makes them indentured servants to the credit card companies. You have to pay back some of that, at least 40% of the debt over 5 years that you may have accrued. Just
right.
Ridiculous. Raised the fees as far as filing bankruptcy. It was basically like a lot of the voter ID laws that have been passed over the last 10 years. Where they found a fake problem in voter fraud and then created a solution for the fake problem.
Right.
Yeah. It's the same thing with bankruptcy abuse. There was no bankruptcy abuse. There's no epidemic of people abusing the bankruptcy system. But yet they passed this bill anyway because they created a problem and then they came up with a solution, which really wasn't a solution to anything other than screwing the middle class. Awful. And Joe Biden was the center of that. Voted for it when it was originally proposed in 2000. Voted for it again in 2003. In 2000, I mean, here's the headline that no one's talking about. In 2000, Joe Biden voted for an early version of the bankruptcy bill. It went all the way up to President Clinton, and someone stepped in. Someone stepped in 2000 and convinced the Clintons to pocket veto the legislation. That person was Harvard professor Elizabeth Warren, who had a meeting with then First Lady Hillary Clinton, convinced her that this bankruptcy bill was a white-hot mess and that they should not support it. Hillary Clinton advises Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton pocket vetoes the thing. And it goes away, at least for another 3 years. Crops up again in 3 years, fails to get out of Congress. And then 2 years after that, finally the bill gets passed, and it's this thing. All the while, Joe Biden is supporting it. And again, it was right before the recession. The year before that bill was passed, the bankruptcy bill, there were about 2 million bankruptcy filings. Doesn't mean every single one was discharged. Doesn't mean every single one was a Chapter 7 clean slate bankruptcy. But there were 2 million of them. At the height of the Great Recession, in 2010, there were 1.5 million bankruptcies filed. So when the economy was doing relatively well in 2005, 2 million. When it fell through the goddamn floor and everyone was f***ed, there was only 1.5 million. There should have been 10 million. I mean, we were handing out money like Coca-Cola to all the Wall Street firms and financial institutions and bailouts. But then middle-class Americans, I sound like Bernie Sanders. The middle class, the one-tenth of 1% is making more money than the rest of the 90%.
And I love how listening to Bernie Sanders is like, it's like going to a Jackie Mason show.
It's like Stephen Colbert said. It's like a guy, you'd hate to be the guy splitting a check with Bernie Sanders.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the middle class got totally screwed. In the meantime, there was no bailout for the middle class. No bankruptcy bill would have been great for the middle class during the recession. People could have started off with a clean slate, gotten the same sort of advantages as businesses did, as financial institutions did. But no. Thank you, Joe Biden. Thank you, George W. Bush. I can't get beyond that. Maybe I should. Maybe I should say, you know what? Hillary voted for Iraq. Hillary voted for the Patriot Act. Look, when it hits home, it hits home. And that recession, I will readily admit that some of this is personal. That recession hit, and I could have been seriously screwed because of that bankruptcy bill. I wasn't, because there was a loophole that I was able to wiggle through. But I just can't get beyond that. And then you couple that with all of Joe Biden's other weirdness, his instability as a candidate, his lack of discipline on the stump. It's just like, what the F are they thinking?
Right. Just somebody needs to sit him down and say, you need to sit this out. Yep. You have to. You have to sit this out.
I have if you want an encapsulation of everything I just said about the bankruptcy bill, I've got a thing coming out on Salon. I don't know if it's going up today. At the very latest, it'll be up tomorrow morning. It's just an entire excoriation of Joe Biden and the bankruptcy bill.
Okay.
I hope it has some efficacy in some way, in some small sense, that some Democrats who, for some reason, in the latest polls, showing Joe Biden in second place, bumping Bernie Sanders out of second place. For some reason, there are Democrats who like Joe Biden. I don't get it. We're going to talk about that poll in just a second after a break, back after this. Hey, folks, Bob here. Unlike the neck-bearded millennials, I shave every damn day. And for the last few weeks, I've been using Harry's shaving products, and I'll never go back to the stores for blades or ever pay those prices again. The Harry's razor fits in my hand and it fits my face. It's a quick and comfortable shave with really smooth results. See, Harry's was started by a couple of guys who passionately wanted to make shaving a better experience. In the process, they bought a German factory that's been making these engineered blades for 100 years. That means no more middleman, no more middleman prices. The blades come straight from that factory at factory prices. Now you can get a Harry's starter kit for just $10 if you use the code RELM, RELM, when you go to harrys.com. That's the razor, a month's supply of blades, and a lathering gel so thick you'll swear it's a dessert topping. and a little travel case to keep your blade fresh on the road. Say goodbye to choosing between expensive brands or cheap disposables. And say hello to Harry's. High-quality blades at a price you'll love. Go to harrys.com right now and enter the code RELM at checkout to get $5 off your first purchase. Get a month of great shaves for just $10. Use the code RELM at harrys.com. That's HARRYS.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Back to the Future today. Welcome to it.
Tell me, Doctor, where are we going this time?
Okay, Hillary Clinton has increased her lead nationally over Bernie Sanders, according to a new poll conducted in the days after the first Democratic presidential debate. According to Monmouth University survey released on Monday, Clinton takes 48% support, 6-point jump over her standing in the same poll from last month. That's massive. That is a massive bump, especially in this day and age, where bumps are almost non-existent. Sanders is in second place with 21% support, essentially unchanged from his 20% standing last month. Vice President Biden, meanwhile, has seen his support fall from 22% last month to 17% in the latest poll. Biden is nearing a decision on whether he'll run and did not participate in the October 13 debate, of course. If Biden does not run for president, a majority of his supporters would gravitate toward Clinton, giving her a formidable lead. Clinton would lead Sanders 57% to 24% with Biden on the sidelines, the poll found. Wow. I just get half expecting, you know, Hillary Clinton to run up with a lead pipe and thwack Biden in the knee with it.
It's one of those times where you need to you do need to think of the good of the party and the good of the country.
Yeah, right.
Again, any other year, you know, years ago, when the Republicans were sane, yeah, sure, why not? I don't have an issue with it.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, I'm sorry, but anything at all that puts the Republicans a half a step closer to winning the White House, the Republicans as they stand now, the group of people they are now, the people they serve, the goddamn lunatics they are, anything that helps them get anywhere near the White House that might help them, you got to throw that shit out.
If Biden were in officially, Monmouth found that Clinton's support would drop to 42%, but that she would maintain a double-digit lead nationally, with Biden taking 27% support and Sanders taking 20%.
You know what? Here's just to go off on a tangent here. Here's one of my issues with the Sanders people.
Yeah.
You know, this is again. This is not a. This is not a anything scientific. It's just what I've noticed from, you know, Facebook, social media, and sort of the way the Sanders people comport themselves. I mean the real, not just people who are like, hey, you know what, I like Bernie Sanders. I mean people who are really like, yeah, Bernie. My whole life is about Bernie. Yes, Bernie, 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 Bernie. I get the impression that those people, if Bernie doesn't win the nomination, I'm not 100% sure that those people are going to show up on election day. You know, I don't get the impression that those are the kind of people who are going to be like, well, you know what, look, Bernie lost, but honestly, we still got the Republicans to beat. So I'm going to go vote for Clinton. I'm going to hold my nose and do that. You know, I have the idea that, like, it feels to me, and again, this is just feeling. This is like a bullshit pundit thing.
Yeah.
It just feels to me like so many that I've interacted with are just like, you know what, my support is for Bernie. It's not even a party thing. It's just Bernie all the way. And if he doesn't get the nomination, that support of Democratic politics is going to go away. That, you know what, maybe I'm not going to vote Republican, but I'm just not going to show up on election day. And if that's true, that scares the piss out of me. That's something that I've always hated. I've always hated this idea that, like, especially right now, that you love a candidate so much that you're not willing to compromise and do the right thing if that candidate doesn't make it all the way.
And it's entirely possible. I mean, it's entirely possible. I mean, it didn't necessarily hurt Barack Obama in 2008 when you had the Pumas saying that there's no way.
This is true. This is absolutely true.
Those of you just joining us, by the way, Puma stood for Party Unity My Ass.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't like a variation of Cougars or something like that. It was just Hillary Clinton supporters.
But they kind of were, let's face it.
Hillary Clinton support. Love the Cougars. Hillary Clinton supporters.
thank you so much for that. I hate my day.
Hillary Clinton supporters just decided there's no way we're going to contest this at the convention. We're not going to vote in the general. if Barack Obama's the nominee. And ultimately, didn't really make a dent. So maybe there's a possibility that Bernie's people, insofar as Bernie has people who will refuse to vote if Hillary Clinton's the nominee, or Joe Biden for that matter. Jesus, talk about this. God, Joe Biden actually runs and then wins the nomination. Welcome, President Trump. Yeah. Or President Ben Carson. Right. God.
I can't wait for his weekly fireside chats.
Oh, man.
Dr. Ben Carson here.
Dr. Ben Carson.
I've got some good news on my fireside chat this week. Let's all take a seat back, and I've got a storybook I want to read you. It's about a praying mantis. Praying mantis named Earl. That praying mantis, he lived in a skyscraper full of lollipops that taste like ketchup. Are you enjoying this story, children? I mean, America? This is a good, good story. And I'll make sure I continue it next week with Earl the Praying Mantis.
Dr. Ben Carson.
Dr. Ben Carson.
It'd be awesome if he became president and he signed off every, like, you know, God bless you, God bless America, Dr. Ben Carson.
That's right. He's got to throw in his name there at the end because name recognition is everything. But I could just, you know what would be great? If Ben Carson won and then only served as president for like 3 months.
Right.
So we got
3 months so that he can sell books.
So he can sell books and we get the comedy. And then goes away after 3 months. That would be so awesome. Even if, you know what? Even if that meant like whoever his wacky vice president would be ascends into office. Like, I assume like his vice presidential candidate, his vice presidential running mate would be like a Beanie Baby or something. It would just be like, you know, like one of those hand puppets you make out of a sandwich bag.
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Ben Carson here. I'm ready to announce my choice for vice president of the United States. Here's my vice presidential candidate. His name. This is putting on the paper bag.
This is Willie. This is Willie, my vice presidential candidate.
Hello, everybody.
This is my friend, Paper Willie. Say hello. Say hello, Paper Willie.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Hello. I'm running for vice president. My name is Paper Willie. Paper Willie loves you. Paper Willie gonna give you tax cut and a flat tax. And we're gonna go invade all the Middle East.
At whenever he has press conferences, like...
Ed Henry, come on up here and give Paper Willie a kiss.
Come on up here. Ed Henry, come on up here. Give Paper Willie a big old kiss. Thank you. Don't you use that tongue, Ed Henry. You keep that tongue in your mouth, Ed Henry.
Ed Henry, with the knowing tongue kisses to the paper puppet. Christ. Where has the show gone? I think we've lost control of the show. Okay, we're going to take another break and come back and I don't know what the hell we're going to talk about, but we'll be back with more show after this.
Hello, it's Bob to tell you about our Patreon page. You might be asking yourself, what the hell is a Patreon page? It's a website where you can help support our podcast by donating money to the show. You can sign up for $1, $5, $10, or $15 per month, or if you're filthy rich, you can sign up for more. In exchange, we'll bring you exclusive Patreon-only content like our post-mortem shows, memberships to the After Party, and commercial-free, unbleeped versions of our free show. And if we reach our crowdfunding goal, we'll bring you new shows every weekday. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez, or click the Patreon link at bobseska.com. Let's do this thing.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Paper Willie.
Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
You know what? I think I found my new favorite bit on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Ben Carson's running mate, Paper Willie. Okay, by the way, the second half of the show is brought to you by the BobSeska.com Amazon link. If you shop at Amazon.com, enter the site using our link. It's just below the logo at BobSeska.com. And we get a small commission from everything you buy. It costs you nothing and helps support the show. And also donates another $5 to the Carson Paper Willie campaign.
Hello. Hello, I'm Paper Willie. I'm Ben Carson's running mate. Please vote for my man, Ben Carson. He's a doctor, and he wants separated Siamese twins. Thank you. Good night.
God, that'd be so awesome. So, so, so awesome.
I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I approve this message. Here now, my vice presidential running mate, Mr. Paper Willie of the great state of my kitchen.
Good day, everybody. My name is Paper Willie. I just gotta say one thing. F*** them motherf***ing Democrats.
Wait a minute, Paper Willie, you're not supposed to swear on television. This is a commercial for the campaign. And I apologize to all my fans and my supporters for Paper Willie's bad, bad language. Bad, bad Paper Willie.
Don't you f***ing tell me nothing what the f*** I'm supposed to do, you motherfucker.
Wow.
Paper Willie with the potty mouth.
Dr. Ben Carson. The difference between Ben Carson and Paper Willie is that Paper Willie is awake.
And what's funny about
Paper Willie is like his Triumph the Insult comic dog. God, that would be awesome.
Okay, this.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me here at this rally in New Hampshire. I'd like to call the stage right now. My running mate, Paper Willie.
Hi, everybody. Paper Willie here again. All y'all got small penises. Y'all got little tiny baby penises.
Shut up. Don't insult the people, Paper Willie.
I got to say anything I want to say. That's what vice presidents do. They say things that the presidential candidate's not allowed to say.
Well, that's true, but you got to be kind to the people.
Yeah, Ben Carson.
Jesus Christ! All right. Well, hey, speaking of Ben Carson, made an ass of himself again this week, and completely was flummoxed by George Stephanopoulos and a discussion about Bin Laden and 9/11 and the Saudis. And it was pretty awesome. Here's Ben Carson on This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
How would you have gotten the moderate Arab governments to turn over Osama bin Laden in 2 weeks? He'd already been expelled by Saudi Arabia. He was already an enemy of those moderate governments.
Well, I think they would have been extremely concerned if we had declared, and we were serious about it, that we were going to become petroleum independent, because it would have had a major impact on their finances. And I think that probably would have trumped any loyalty that they had to people like Osama.
It's such nonsense.
Yeah.
Loyalty to Osama bin Laden, he's about to say. It's such nonsense that if we were to be oil independent of the Middle East, they would have, basically he's saying that they would have turned over bin Laden to us. If George W. Bush had said, you know what, instead of invading Iraq and Afghanistan, we're going to become oil independent. And then suddenly they'd be like, oh, okay, here's bin Laden for you.
Right.
I don't see how the hell that works.
You know what? Matt Taibbi wrote about this, about how Republicans have a really, really impressive way of, no matter what, going back to their main shibboleths.
Right.
That oil independence, that's one of them. Mm-hmm. No matter what the hell, no matter what subject you're talking about, no matter what happened, basically, like, the way that he brought it up was through disaster politics.
Yeah, right.
You know, whenever something happens, there's a hurricane coming, you know what? We got a oil independence. We need to start drilling for our own oil because that's going to affect this right now. Yeah, you know, just that's a huge thing. It's like, you know, it's like the people going back to Benghazi over every, you know, anytime somebody brings up something else, like Louis Gohmert talking about it when you're talking about Planned Parenthood.
But they didn't have any loyalty to Osama bin Laden. The Saudis kicked him out. He was their enemy.
Well, you may not think that they had any loyalty to him, but I believe otherwise.
There you go. Never mind the facts. I believe this.
That's right. Okay. I believe this to be true, therefore right. It is.
Therefore it's true. It's, you know, honestly, dude, if you walk outside your house,
you're not going to float up into the sky. There's this thing called gravity. Well, you may believe that, but I believe otherwise. Okay. Doesn't matter. You're fucking wrong.
By the way, thanks to you and Paper Willie, it's going to spend all afternoon bleeping the show. So, yeah, let's continue with this Ben Carson. He's just going to continue to step in it here.
So you believe that had President Bush simply declared energy independence, they would have turned over Osama bin Laden? How would they have gotten him out of the tribal areas of Afghanistan and Pakistan?
I think they would have known where he was. You know, there were indications for instance, during the Clinton administration, that they knew exactly where he was.
He is listen to him. He is just tap dancing.
He is.
He really is. He is totally just, he is twisting in the wind trying to come up with an answer.
Exactly. It's what we talked about. It's like the guy who didn't prepare for the oral exam and is just BSing his way through it. That's exactly what he's doing. Yeah, like bin Laden is chained to a cave in Afghanistan and didn't move from like 1996 through, you know, whenever it was he was captured or killed by the Obama administration. What was that, 2011? Hmm. 1996, 2011, bin Laden was in the exact same place the whole time. So then how was it that the Saudis didn't know that he was there and captured him? Between the time Bill Clinton knew where he was and the time that the Obama administration determined that he was, you know, not in a cave, by the way, in Abbottabad, in Pakistan. He was in different places because he could move around, idiot.
Didn't necessarily pull the trigger. If we could tell where he was, I'm certain that they knew where he was.
But at that point, we had some idea.
I mean, he has no evidence whatsoever.
Right.
His certainty doesn't mean I'm certain that they knew where he was. Well, do we have any intelligence along those lines? Well, you might think we don't. I think we do.
Okay.
All right.
You know, we didn't even discuss the fact that he briefly suspended his campaign to go do a book tour.
A book tour. Now you really know what guides these guys.
Yeah, because that's what it is. That's all these. It really is sad that the Republican frontrunners are all basically grifters.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Totally. And
Trump is doing it to fuel his own ego, his own megalomania. This guy wants to sell books and be on Fox for the rest of his life.
I mean, how is the current status of the Republican Party not front page news in every goddamn newspaper? I guess it's just the paranoia about being accused of participating in the liberal media conspiracy. But the fact is that this is amazing. That it is, for the Republican side, that it has become so ridiculous. The guy in second place just asserted on This Week with George Stephanopoulos that they knew where he was. They would have turned him over just because I think they would. Well, gee, no evidence. No business. He has no business being out there.
Please ISO that and play that over and over.
I've just been channeling Clint Howard lately.
Such a no business.
Clint Howard in Parenthood.
No. No business being out there! None of them!
Good God. All right, we're going to take one last break and come back with more. You know what? We might actually... We have some more Jesse Ventura audio this week, and it's actually great. Back with more show after this.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius Bath and Body Products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius. Doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Maybe my all-time favorite music score.
Really?
Alan Silvestri? Yeah. This is great. To me, this, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was the fact that it was 1985 and it was, you know, sort of coming of age year for our generation. And I don't know, for some reason, I always associate this music with just the fun of going to the movies. Just one of those themes that really, just screams out excellence and, you know, summertime movie going. All right. Jesse Ventura explained trickle-down economics using 1980s wrestling.
Oh, good. Wait, really?
I couldn't resist. I know we've been talking about Jesse Ventura a lot lately. I just couldn't resist this one.
Let's win this thing.
We demand a man who speaks his mind.
Jesse Ventura.
Darn right.
Not some suit who only toes the party line.
I don't play that game.
Jesse.
When those other guys were cashing government checks,
yeah,
he was in the Navy getting dirty and wet. We demand a lead.
All right, so talk about someone whose vice presidential nominee is going to be a paper bag hand puppet.
Making me blush.
We want one of us, not someone on the
Jesse Ventura on his show discussed trickle-down economics. He's talking about the 1980s and Reagan, Reaganomics and trickle-down.
Watch your mouth.
And somehow was able to tie in Vince McMahon and the WWF. Here we go.
Jesse, you lived through the Reagan era. What is your general impression of him? Were you following politics as closely back then?
No, not nearly as closely. The 1980s was when I was at the prime of my pro wrestling career. And it was also in the mid-80s that wrestling went through its huge transition of being a regionalized in 26 territories.
And meanwhile, I was high as a kite on painkillers. Darn right.
All right.
To where Vince McMahon took a national NBC Saturday night's main event, the birth of WrestleMania. So that was all going on in the 80s under Ronald Reagan's Reaganomics. I guess we'd call that the trickle-down economy.
I don't know what... How does he go from the introduction of WrestleMania and associate that with Reagan in some way? Not quite sure how that works.
It was part of the pro... wrestling trickle-down economy of the 1980s. Vince got all the money, and a great deal trickled to Hogan, and then a little bit trickled down to
the
rest of us.
Sound effects? Is that like, are they doing like a cartoon of Jesse's rise to greatness?
Yeah, they're doing sort of an explainer. They're doing a Vox.com style explainer, but associating Reagan's trickle-down economics with how Vince McMahon ran the WWF at the time. So Vince McMahon had all the money, and then some of it would trickle down to Hogan. That's what Jesse was saying there, Hulk Hogan. And then all the rest of the money from there would trickle down to everybody else. And it's illustrated by showing Roddy Piper, Jesse Ventura, of course, Gorilla Monsoon. Gene Okerlund. Right. But yeah, this all got trickle-down money.
Dusty Rhodes.
Dusty Rhodes, yeah, that's right.
When it was all said and done.
Oh, no.
Woo! McMahon.
All right, that was it. That's Jesse Ventura's explanation of trickle-down economics. So if you're a wrestling fan, you know exactly what all that means. At least a wrestling fan in the 1980s.
Well.
I'm not quite sure that Jesse knew what any of that meant, but so be it. All right, so
he's just waiting to be nominated amongst the libertarian parties, so that then he can say that he's not going to run as a libertarian.
So
he's got it all figured out,
right? And of course, yeah, that's exactly right. He's going to court the libertarians. They're going to nominate him, and then he's going to turn it down for some reason, because that's just the Jesse Ventura way. All right, so changing gears to the Star Wars trailer. You saw the Star Wars trailer, obviously, and I was amazed that you out-geeked me. You've completely out-geeked
me.
Why
is that?
Because you already bought your goddamn tickets.
Of course I did. Just because I may not, you know, just because George Lucas has you know, dashed my hopes, and I'm not the Star Wars geek I was, you know, like 30 years ago, doesn't mean I'm not going to see the movie. And I'd rather see it sooner than later. So absolutely.
First of all,
I got tickets. I got tickets for 9 a.m. day one.
That's amazing. Well, first of all, what did you think?
IMAX.
What did you think of the new trailer?
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's really awesome.
I mean, again, it's more proof that J.J. Abrams made a competent movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's saying that he made a competent movie sounds like such an insult, but it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm really vacillating between being really, really excited and just being cautiously optimistic. Because I remember seeing those episode one trailers and going, this is going to be amazing. This is going to blow the original trilogy away.
Right, but again, it's Abrams, and, you know, I get the impression that they really, really want to stay true to what the first trilogy meant to everybody. And I think that's going to make a difference. I think that's going to matter. You know, is there a chance that it will suck? Oh, yeah, of course. But, you know, it doesn't mean I'm not going to see it.
Right. Let's ask Ben Carson's running mate, Paper Willie, what he thinks of the Star Wars trailer. Paper Willie, what do you think of the Star Wars trailer? Suck my d-. All right, sorry. That's not necessary. Thank you. Okay, but yeah, so there was actually some controversy that was stirred up around it. And you posted something on Facebook that I thought was utterly fascinating. Evidently, the Boycott Star Wars 7 hashtag
was like troll. Troll.
Basically troll, of course.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what bothers me, and you know what, and by the way, complete honesty, I've been guilty of this too. You know, when you're looking for a story, a lot of times you'll grab anything. And the age of Twitter has brought us, for lack of a better term, it's brought us sort of like a phony consensus.
Right.
And so now we look at something and we're like, oh my God, look, people on Twitter are saying this. There are like millions of people on Twitter. If you got a couple of people who come up with a hashtag, that's not a fucking story.
No, it's not.
That's not. That's, you know, that's 5 or 6 people or 10 or even 100, even 200, 300, 400 people is not a story out of the millions of people because everybody has access to Twitter. So when, you know, a few hundred people come up with this, oh, you know, we're boycotting Star Wars because it's white genocide. You know, of course, everybody just jumps on it. Even really reputable outlets, media outlets, jumped all over that. And the whole time I'm sitting there going, oh, man, you're all going to get had because this is nothing. This is a giant pile of nothing.
Yeah, right. The white supremacists started this up to protest the diversity of the movie, right? And then so it ended up spreading all around social media. But the fact is that 94% of all the uses of that hashtag were people that were protesting the hashtag.
Right. And yeah, that's all it takes. It takes a couple of people. It takes one or two trolls to say, we're doing this. We're doing this thing that's going to offend everybody and piss off everybody. And then everybody else responds by turning it on its ass. And then Salon writes about it, or Slate writes about it, or you know, even bigger outlets write about it, and they use it as an example of, oh, look, you know what, there are still assholes out there who just can't accept the fact that Star Wars is now multicultural. Yay, multiculturalism! Which, by the way, I'm not knocking, but that's, you know, it becomes like every other controversy these days, especially controversies involving Twitter and social media, it becomes this blank slate on which you can project whatever your particular, you know, your pet issue.
Yeah. Well, we now live in an era where the minority, and I'm not saying that in the racial sense, but a minority of people just in general can have a massively lopsided voice, can take on. And I, you know what, frankly, I attribute this sort of dynamic to the Tea Party a little bit. There are a lot of movements lately that have been composed of very few people that just because they've been loud, they've been paid attention to unnecessarily.
That's absolutely true, by the way. And that does extend into the political realm. It
right,
does.
Right. But that didn't stop Chuck C. Johnson from climbing on board. I don't even think he has a website.
He sits in his corner with his thumb up his ass, you know, spouting bull.
Yeah. It's just like, right, he posted a bunch of stuff. He was like, is the very white Star Wars being culturally appropriated by the Jewish J.J. Abrams, he said. Then he said, the mulatto Landel Calrissian betrays our heroes before he is redeemed. Mace Windu is essentially a non-entity in the early episodes. Jar Jar Binks, who is voiced by a black man, is similarly irrelevant, though I'll note that it's Binks' vote that gives us the Empire. Huh. So basically, he's like,
Like, Chuck D. Jones is like, well, because Jar Jar Binks was voiced by a black guy. A black guy gave us the evil Star Wars Empire.
You know what, though? Again, that's more trolling. It just is. That's look at me, look at me. Hey, here, I'm, you know, everybody, they took my Twitter account away. So now I still need to do things every once in a while. I need to work even harder to get attention.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, speaking of trolls, Trump blamed George W. Bush for 9/11.
That actually was pretty badass.
Yeah.
I mean, not badass in the sense that you know, I'm giving Trump any credit, but it's just funny the gigantic stink bomb that riled up.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine looking forward, looking through a crystal ball or something like this, having a 1.21 gigawatt DeLorean and going to the future and seeing the Republican frontrunner criticizing George W. Bush for having been responsible for 9/11?
Yeah, it's kind of great.
Good Lord.
Well, I mean, I like it because then you get, media people nailing people who are saying Clinton is, Hillary Clinton's responsible for Benghazi, but oh, no, Bush wasn't responsible for 9/11. It's like, how can you, I think it was Jake Tapper, how can you say that? How can you sit there and say that?
Yeah. Well, it's like saying,
By the way, I don't know if you noticed, did you see another Jeb tweet about?
No, what?
Oh my God. Oh, dude, it was so awesome. It was so awesome. It's like, he was responding to, seriously, Trump has done more to damage Jeb Bush than like anything possibly could. he's been picking on him so much. And so Jeb Bush, of course, respond on Twitter. And the tweet was something like, Donald Trump's attacks are pathetic. My brother kept us safe. We were attacked on 9/11. And I put that up on Facebook and I'm like, we were attacked. My brother kept us safe. Look at those. What's so interesting about those two statements?
That is astonishing. I mean, it just never ceases to. It's just completely is confounding.
Yeah.
That someone would have the nerve to say that. And the fact of the matter is that even after 9/11, didn't keep us safe. Numbers show opposite. There were 13 Benghazi-style attacks during the George W. Bush administration. 13 of them. 13 attacks on our consulates and embassies overseas. Some of them against the same embassy. Against the same embassy. There were fatalities. There were American fatalities. Good Lord. Kept us safe. My ass. Even domestically, there was the anthrax attacks. That happened after 9/11. There were the Beltway snipers. That happened after 9/11. 13 different embassy attacks. Thousands of attacks on our contractors and our soldiers in Iraq. At checkpoints and so forth. Jesus. I mean, I know that there's a cynicism on the right that says that no one remembers jack shit that happened even yesterday, much less 10 years ago. But it's easily researchable. I mean, there is Google and YouTube. We can find these things. The cynicism is just, goddamn. All right, we've got the postmortem show coming up next. If you're a subscriber at patreon.com/Bob and Chez. If you're not, go ahead and sign up. It's only $5 a month. You get the postmortem show. If you sign up at the $10 a month level, postmortem show and the after party, $15 a month. You get postmortem, after party, and commercial free unbleeped version of this show. That's at patreon.com/Bob and Chez. Go sign up right now. Thank you very much. Postmortem show is next. We'll see you on Thursday. Bye. Bye-bye.